Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. I'm Travis. Kyle's here. God, we're on such a pace. We're on such a schedule, Kyle. We're doing this week after week after week. It's rack on rack on rack. Tonight, I know last week we said we were going to do the NFC North preview with Nick this week. We decided to push that to next week. We're going to talk about the Colts. I guess we'll also talk about some Bears preseason action. Yeah, maybe a little about the third preseason game.
Get some Bears out of the way first, and then Travis is, because I just want to remember folks that on this podcast, I made Travis commit. He was hedging. He was wavering. He was being a little bitch. Be a little bit of a bitch.
You just called yourself a bitch. He was so hard.
No. It's different when I do it. It's different when I do it. I do it with skill and I do it with grace. And
okay, all right.
But Travis he's hedging a little bit a couple years back, yeah. And I was like, Travis, I know what you want to say. So tell me right now on this draft that you think that Anthony Richardson is QB1 in the 2023 NFL draft. Tell me that you'd take him over CJ Stroud. And I made him say it, and he said it. So Travis is obviously, and Travis, he was in love with Anthony Richardson as a prospect, and so he's been hanging on this Richardson stuff, and I think it's a fascinating discussion, because I also, I actually didn't hedge that time in that episode, and I kind of wanted to, because, you can listen to it, and there was a lot about Anthony Richardson as a prospect that I loved, and I made a very compelling argument for him, I think, that you were just nodding along with the whole time, and then all of a sudden I was like, but these accuracy numbers are fucking atrocious, and I can't make myself believe that a guy who's this bad at it is going to get better in the NFL. And so far, he hasn't. But we'll get into Anthony Richardson here in a bit. I also kind of want to talk.
I like how you set this up so you could say we're going to talk about that later. But I'm going to say my piece, and then Travis doesn't say anything.
Oh, I've got
now,
so much.
Guys, let's talk about the Bears.
I've got so let's much talk more about the to Bears say. Now. I just want to say why you want to talk about it.
We've been talking about this Colts.
We've been talking.
At some point, we got to put it on the pod.
I also feel like we sort of got to talk about Shedeur Sanders a little bit, just because.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I gave him the thumbs up two weeks ago, and now I have to be like, wait a minute. Wait.
Yeah, no. But anyway, no, in Bears news, okay, so obviously the biggest thing that's happened since the last time we recorded was the third preseason game. Starters came out a little rough. I do feel like, and I understand, because everybody's butthole in Bears Nation is puckered, specifically about Caleb Williams. We know that. Everybody's butthole is puckered about if Ben Johnson's actually the guy he's advertised to be. The focus is going to be a quarterback. And here at Start Kyle Orton, we do understand focusing on the Bears quarterback, even though they're usually not even worth focusing on. I do understand focusing on that to the detriment of everything else. But I feel like you and I both walked out of that game being like, it seems a little bit more noteworthy that the defense was just getting their faces kicked in the entire time they were on the field. A lot of focus on Caleb Williams in the offense, not enough focus maybe on the defense being down 20-0 by the time Caleb took the field for a third time, or 17-0. So that was interesting to me. But you know what?
Also, something that tends to happen to Bears quarterbacks too, right? We can say in retrospect, Justin Fields wasn't that good. Mitch Trubisky wasn't that good. But you would also often see, when we have these young quarterbacks, our defense puts us down 17-0, 24-0 immediately. And then it's like, why didn't the quarterback keep pace?
Yeah.
It's like, well, if you put it in isolation, the first team put up 10 points there in the first half.
Yeah.
Caleb had a decent line against a defense that carried the Chiefs to the Super Bowl last year. Their offense struggled.
Well, and one of the best secondaries, specifically the Chiefs have us. And I felt like, and it's funny because we just talked about Shane Waldron last week, I think it was, where we said, we got a little nervous about Shane Waldron's play calling and usage of personnel last preseason. And we were like, well, hopefully this isn't the real offense. And when the season starts, things will be different. And then the real regular season offense looked exactly like the preseason offense. So it could sound like cope for us to sit here and say, well, this is just Ben Johnson's preseason offense. But I feel like there's a little more validity to that argument when Ben Johnson, even before the Chiefs game, was asked by Kay Adams about their really good performance against the Bills. Was like, did you game plan for that? How did that work out? And Ben literally was like, oh, no, that's like the same five. That's the same preseason playbook that I use for everything. I don't give away anything for that. Like, that's just, we don't rep those plays specially. And so it's worth in the context, like, because there were a couple plays that, like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Caleb played amazing. I also didn't think he played real poorly by any means either. I feel like,
agreed.
We'll talk about the sack here specifically in a second, because it's like the sack heard around the world. It's because McMahon, it's like, gosh, we all were afraid at some point Caleb Williams was going to take a sack this year, and boy, were we right, you know?
When you watch it live, you see Cole Kmet right on the bottom of the screen. Yeah, let's just talk about it right now. You see Caleb run away and get sacked, and it looks bad.
On the broadcast, it absolutely feels like the sack that we saw Justin Fields take 50 times, where he's dancing, he's running, he's getting sacked while Cole Kmet's just streaking wide open on the play. Now, you watch the play, especially if you watch it from the end zone view from behind Caleb's perspective, the pass pro does totally hold up. I get why Ben Johnson was like, it seemed like, sounds like good pass protection to me. And I'm not going to say Caleb Williams shouldn't have found a way to get rid of the ball before he did take the sack. That is true. But when you watch Caleb's process on the play, it's not what it felt like live, because you're worried you were going to look at the all 22 and be like, oh fuck, he had so-and-so ass open, stared him down, panicked, pulled it down. That's not what happens. If you watch, and this part of this is on Cole Kmet not being the best separator against man, a point that I've made on this podcast many times. At the time that Caleb is looking at Cole in the progression, the Chiefs linebacker is in front of him and angled in a way that he could make a play on the ball. It's only when Caleb looks away from Cole to roam that the backer gets out of position and Cole comes open. Now, obviously, what we would like Caleb to do later in the season as a veteran quarterback, as a guy who's learning to trust this offense, what we'd like to see him do is use that. Use your eyes to look to roam, freeze that defender, and know you have Cole there and fire it there. He didn't do that. But really, like, if you watch it too, that concept is terrible against the man cover that the Chiefs are running. It's a very basic, very static pass concept. Ben Johnson, like we said, Ben Johnson said, this isn't us just covering for Ben Johnson. These are not our regular season plays. This is just, I don't give anything away in preseason. We don't rep these plays specifically. We don't script drives for preseason. He just called a basic pass play into man coverage. It was not a good one for man coverage. The only man beating route was Kmet. Kmet's your worst man beater of them all. He just doesn't beat men off the line of scrimmage like we would like, you know, about Cole. He has many great qualities, but beating men off, that's just not one of them.
When I watch football, all I want to see is just beating men off the line.
I mean,
beating.
What I want from Ben Johnson specifically is just man beaters up and down the field. Like, that's what he's brought in here to do.
Men beating other men.
You
got to
beat those
off
men
the line.
Off the line. Just that's what I want. But that play wasn't it. So I really didn't have a problem with Cole or with Caleb not letting the ball go in that time that he did. The problem there is, and as usual, there was a typical refrain from Bears media where they were just like, throw it away then. You can't just throw the ball. We went over this with Justin, and in days of yore, we went over it with Jay Cutler. There is a thing called a tackle box. There is a penalty called intentional grounding. You can't just go, no, 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 yeet the ball into the stands, guys. It's not how it works. Mm-hmm. But this was where Caleb did have a problem last year sometimes, and I think it's because he is so obsessed with beating all he does is run around and play backyard football like Johnny Manziel allegations. Sometimes last year, he was a little bit too robotic about just relying on his creation when he should. So, like, what I would say to Caleb is 1, 2, 3, it's not there. You read it out. You did read it out correctly. You processed correctly that the options weren't open, but then don't hang in the pocket for an extra second trying to see if something develops. Use your legs, immediately get outside and start running. And then once you're outside the tackle backs, you could either pick up some yardage or you can throw the ball away. But he does need to be a tick quicker about just running it out of bounds. But that's also, Caleb's going to take sacks at times, and most of them are going to frustrate you because he is very much from that Russell Wilson mold, that Aaron Rodgers mold. You don't want to necessarily stifle that because the dude is a play extender. He was probably the best play extending quarterback in college football history. Like, you're going to want him to use that. You just want him to be a little bit quicker about defaulting to that. And I think he's trying so hard to be a good boy, stay in the pocket, find answers within structure. But sometimes you just got to be like, sometimes there isn't an answer in structure. You've run through the whole test. You went 1, 2, 3, 4. It wasn't there. Then just go for it, buddy. Just get the hell out of there.
That's interesting. I kind of had the opposite take on that one. I think it was that one play specifically, and it was really just that play. The rest of the night, he was well on time, but you could kind of tell that he was a little too fast for his receivers.
He was ahead of
his first three reads, and yeah, that's part of why Cole wasn't open. I don't think he would have been open anyway because the linebacker was in position.
I do think he read the player a little quickly, and that is where I suspect that at some point in the future, if the Bears did run a play similar to that in a real regular season game, my guess is Cole Kmet is not the tight end who's running that route. It's Colston Loveland. Yep. They're going to want a guy who can separate half a tick faster so Caleb can see it half a tick faster and get it to him there.
That whole play was very un-Ben Johnson. We had to JT O'Sullivan of QB School had a funny take when we played the Bills the week previous where they ran a play. The one that ended in the abortive pass to the running back that didn't end up getting caught. And he was like, I don't know if this is like an homage to Bill Walsh or what, but like every quarterback or every coach like this runs this play. And that's basically what it was, which is why, you know, a couple days later when Ben Johnson said, oh, this is from my book of preseason plays. I've ran this with the Lions every year. There's nothing interesting about this. Everybody knows what I've got. They literally are just homage plays. Like he ran four verts last game. This play, the play with Cole, really, Cole was the only route that was going to beat man on that play. Everything else was like a shallow slant, like just weak ass play. It was not designed to be successful. It's designed to be a preseason play.
Yeah. I mean, if they had gotten zone coverage, would have been fine. They got man coverage.
Yep.
And the Chiefs have a very good secondary. They were sticking quite well to the Bears receivers. Now, the only other thing. One other thing I did see, like, do I think Caleb played his best game? No. But one thing I sort of feel like is even with the plays being pretty basic, even with the protection at left tackle still being a little iffy there, there was this play when they were in the red zone. Caleb has a touchdown to Zacchaeus. You can tell pre-snap he sees that Zacchaeus is going to be open. His eyes get big because he's waiting for it, and Braxton immediately fucks up the play. Caleb has to flee the pocket and throw it away. He had a touchdown there.
Not even a physical thing. It was just a complete mental gap for Braxton. Whipped.
Yeah, and I think that's and I feel like if Caleb hits that touchdown to Zacchaeus there against the Chiefs ones over the middle of field in structure, everyone walks away feeling a lot better about that night, that which is why it's so funny to overanalyze these three preseason drives the way people are. I feel like the floor, like we're sitting here quibbling, like Caleb was 11 of 15, 113 yards. He had a touchdown. Passer rating was like 122.6 or whatever. For the preseason, he was 17 of 25, so almost at that 70% mark. Over 7.5, like 7.8 yards per attempt or something, passer rating over 100. He went, so from last year's preseason to this year's preseason, his adjusted completion percentage went from 61% to 81%. His time to throw dropped from 3.68 seconds to 2.8 seconds or whatever. And again, it's preseason. You can say it doesn't matter, but you compare it to last year's preseason, you're seeing the signs of a guy who's playing on time, playing on target, making smarter decisions than he was even last preseason, which is all you can ask for. It's all you can, you know, we got to wait to see it in real games, but like there seems to be some evidence at least that it's trending in the right direction. We're overanalyzing one 5-yard sack, and it was a 5-yard sack. Like it's not, for example, Shedeur Sanders losing 23 yards on a sack, it's a 5-yard sack. And I feel like, you know, maybe things aren't so as dire as they think when we're overanalyzing a 5-yard sack. But I was going to say, even in that, you know, the first drive, they had the fumble and a delay of game back-to-back. Any drives, again, I don't care if you're the 1999 Rams, your drive's probably dead right there if you have a fumble and a false start back-to-back on your first two plays. And through none of that was Caleb's fault. It sure seems like Zacchaeus was the one who got that play wrong on the fumble because he seemed like he had never seen a football before in his life as Caleb was trying to hand him the ball. And I doubt Caleb just ad-libbed the decision to run a jet sweep there. I'm guessing Oz missed a check of some kind. And then he's not to blame, even though Sports Illustrated would have you believe otherwise. I don't think he's to blame for Colston Loveland, a rookie, committing a false start in his first NFL game on the road either. So that first drive, you know, throw it out. That's not on Caleb Williams. And I even thought the pass that he made to DJ Moore hung in the, it wasn't actually like that easy, but he hung in the pocket. He threw with a little bit of anticipation to DJ there too on the comebacker. Didn't try to make a bad play worse or anything like that. But then in their second and third drive, they picked a couple first downs. The third drive, they got all the way into the red zone. Like I said, would have had a touchdown if Braxton doesn't blow the block on that pass to Zacchaeus. So I feel like even as vanilla as the plays were, as much as you're mad about Caleb taking that sack, they move the ball pretty well against that Chiefs, those Chiefs ones. And I think what you're seeing is that Ben Johnson really can be a floor raiser for this offense. We shouldn't have, even when Caleb's not playing his best game, and I don't think he was Friday night, I also don't think he was awful, but like even Caleb's not playing his best game, with the talent they have on this roster and with that guy calling plays, the floor should be raised. You don't really have those, you shouldn't hopefully have those abortions like the Seahawks game last year, the Patriots game last year, the Cardinals game, where just absolutely nothing's fucking working and Caleb's eating a sack every other drop back and nobody knows what the hell they're doing. They should be able to still move the ball, pick up first downs, avoid the big negatives like they had last year. And I think that's encouraging.
Yeah, I got to agree. I mean, we did kind of gloss over that pass to Rome in the end zone where he just did not diagnose the defense correctly. And that ended up getting into harm's way.
Well, yeah. No, sorry. I thought you were talking about the actual touchdown to Rome. I was like, I was going to say, I kind of don't have a problem.
I'm kind of ticky tack about that because I do think it was a touch slow, but
it's one like of those situations preseason. Where I'm like, you know, you've got Rome Odunze on a hitch. Like that would also be the read that I'd stare down on that play. I'd be like, yeah. I'm going to throw it to Rome in the red zone. That's just, but yeah, the pass off of Rome's hands that I didn't love that either, but I also, there wasn't really like an open receiver he missed. And I kind of, for, with Caleb having a proven, one thing he does have a proven track record of last year, you know, as a rookie, he had over 600 dropbacks and he threw 6 interceptions. So I'm choosing to believe that this is not a kid who has suddenly decided he's just going to yeet the ball at double coverage for fun's sake. I think that's a guy who's like, it's preseason, it's third and goal effectively. I'm not going to check it down. I'm going to try to give my guy a shot in the end zone because we might need to make that play someday in a game that matters. But I think the floor of the offense has been raised high. If there are things that actually matter from that preseason game that I'm a little concerned about, number one is I know you had a good camp. I know the coaches really like how hard he's been working. I don't think Nashawn Wright is actually a starting corner in the NFL, guys. He looked pretty hopelessly outclassed by Rashee Rice on every single snap that they had against each other. I know they're trying to send a message to Tyreek Stevenson. I know they're trying to, they've got him in the doghouse trying to motivate the kid. But like Tyreek, for all of his flaws, I think does have the talent to be a starting NFL corner. I don't think Nashawn Wright does.
I would get rid of both of them if I could, but yeah, I think I would probably rather have Tyreek over him. I mean, it depends on attitude at this point.
Yeah.
Like I stand by what I said last year. I think the last thing we're going to remember of Tyreek Stevenson is that moment against the Commanders. And I doubt that things get much better from here, but you know, I didn't really care for Tyreek as a prospect in college. So I haven't really been changed off of that very much. Terrell Smith going down sucks. Because that really saps the depth there at corner. We are very top heavy now with Jalen and with Kyler Gordon. Although it seems like both of them are going to be able to go week one.
Yeah, I mean that's
is Josh Blackwell the answer finally? Is it Josh's time?
Oh, Kyle? It's Josh.
Blackwell. Is it Blackwell City?
I like Blackwell, but I think he's a backup corner. I don't think he's a backup outside corner.
Unfortunately, at this point, I think we got 3 backup corners. Yeah. At that number 2 spot.
Yeah,
so
we'll have to see. Other stuff that I think might matter from that game. I actually thought Luke Newman looked pretty.
Yes.
Like at first glance, when I was watching broadcast, I thought he was getting pummeled a little bit. But when I actually went back and watched, I was like, oh no, that was mostly Braxton Jones. Which is not comforting to think, but I thought Luke Newman held his own. Obviously he, knock on wood, does not currently have a path to starting with Tooney and Dahlman and Jonah Jackson at set at the interior spots. But I, like we said last week, I think Ryan Poles, bless his heart, may have finally figured out that sometimes you can find guards if you just draft a guard. If you're just like, did this guy play guard in college? Well, then maybe he is a guard and we could have guard. Maybe I don't just draft a tackle and hope that he at worst fails into guard. Maybe you just take a guard.
Yeah, there's a reason we recoiled in horror at the Tyler Booker pick by the Cowboys at 12th overall. It's because these guys are just there in the third, fourth, and fifth round. They're just quality guards, man. They're just sitting there. You can just take them. They're free.
So I thought that. And then,
wow, the pass blocking was good, but the run blocking from Luke Newman, he threw Chris Jones around.
He looked good. He looked good on the move for sure. Anything else from the preseason? Oh, I guess one last thing that might have mattered in the preseason is that Andrew Billings was playing into the fourth quarter of the third preseason game. And the thought hadn't even occurred to me. I did think even for him, Big Bill was looking a little heavy. So I thought maybe this was like coaches using the game as like a kind of conditioning. But never did I think that meant that Big Bill was actually on the roster bubble. But Dan Wiederer today suggested that Big Bill could be cut. First off, I get that he is not an ideal scheme fit for what Dennis Allen likes to do. If you look at the history of the rosters he's had in New Orleans and Oakland, you don't find many guys that are the size and shape of Andrew Billings in his defensive scheme. I get that. But I don't like that possibility at all.
Yeah, I mean, notably, Andrew Billings wasn't out there with the ones, and what happened? Our defense looked like it was made of fucking paper, which, very similar to what happened last year. Anytime Billings sat on the bench, this defense turned to shit. Anytime he came back out onto the field, suddenly it was stout again. It's not rocket science. It's not a mystery. That guy has been the linchpin of good defenses when he's been on the field the entire time he's been in the NFL, just about. Except for, I think, his rookie season, half of his second season. So, the most underrated dude in the league, couldn't believe we could have him for the contract we've got him on, and now it looks like Dennis Allen is coming in trying to pull the old Mike Martz. Well, I don't know what to do with him, so trade him, and we'll play Chris Williams.
Yeah.
He's leaner, and I guess he fits my scheme better, but Chris Williams is a known quantity, and so is Andrew Billings.
Yeah, I mean,
he's a known quantity to be much better than Chris Williams. Yeah.
The only thing that I will maybe give them the benefit of the doubt on is that we've really only seen Big Bill against backups this preseason, so we really don't know. It's hard to judge, what he's been looking like against the starters in camp. And, the whispers I've heard is maybe that, again, he's not quite back in shape yet after missing most of the offseason with his injury, not at full rehab. Maybe he doesn't have that great get-off for such a large man that we were used to seeing from him in years past now that he's been injured. Maybe they do cut him. We get outraged, and then it turns out that like he's just lost that first step, in which case he's really not that useful. And they're vindicated. But I just feel like there's not enough quality depth on this roster. And the thing about Big Bill is
we just don't have that kind of defensive line.
And if he is healthy, and you do have Grady Jarrett, and you do have Jervon Dexter, the whole point of Andrew Billings, that thing that made him so great early in games last year and the year before, is early in games before he got tired, he had a crazy good first step and a good pass rush for a dude as big as he was. Now, he would wear down by the end of games and give you less and less and less. But if you can keep him fresh, I think he rushes the passer like a guy who is smaller than he is. And maybe you could make him work. But yes, it feels like if they did cut him, and I don't know that they are, we'll find, by the time you guys listen to this episode, you'll probably know if he got cut or not. The deadline's tomorrow.
Intentionally recording this Monday night so we don't even know.
We don't even know. We just wanted to get it out there. We just wanted to have our take. But if he does get cut, it definitely feels like kind of disappointing for Dennis Allen's reputation for being such a creative defensive coordinator that he couldn't find a way to work around a guy like that.
It will be a huge red flag to me if Dennis Allen looks at a guy like Andrew Billings and says, sorry, I need to use Chris Williams for my defense, because that reeks to me of the kind of guru mentality that we have lampooned for the last couple weeks here. I mean, we talked about this when we signed Grady Jarrett and goddamn Dio, who already looks fucking useless. Well, and we said, if you can this makes sense if you are switching guys in and out. If you are saying everybody is playing half the snaps and everybody is fresh, and we're not seeing a huge drop in quality unless we're going from, like, you know, Jervon down to Chris Williams, or we're going from Montez Sweat down to, you know, Austin Booker. No shade to Austin. You know, we're just hoping everybody's fresh. Everybody's hot.
You're shading everybody. Austin.
I like Austin. I spoke his name, so now I like him.
You did. Okay.
But once you take away a guy like Andrew Billings, what do we got left? We're switching from Grady Jarrett down to Chris Williams. Are we keeping Zach Pickens? What is the plan here if you're getting rid of Andrew Billings? Like, what do you...
Can you imagine if after all this time, Zach Pickens and Dom Robb survive Final Cuts?
I can imagine, because it's the Chicago Bears.
The world we're going to be like, we've just taken it for granted all offseason. And then, God, they could make fools of us again.
I didn't. I told you, Dominique Robinson is making this team. Guaranteed. And I'm going to be pissed off about it. And he's absolutely making this team right now.
There was something in there I was about to.
But yeah, Kyle, I am already putting it on the list. Dio is going on to the worst Bears of the last 20 years. I guarantee it. This guy is such a waste of money.
I will.
I know you're not going to commit to it, and it'll be hilarious if he's good this year. I hate watching him.
Well,
play,
I will say this: we talked about Ben Johnson not showing his hand. Dennis Allen has 100% not showed his hand, because I can't recall through the games that I've watched the Bears really doing much in the way of stunts, especially with their starters. And one of the reasons I thought maybe they made the Dio signing was he was extremely effective last year in Indianapolis on stunts. And Dennis Allen is the motherfucker loves stunts. He does.
He does.
Think that he was going up against a Chris Morgan coached offensive line every week, the way this guy runs stunts. And so Dio was really good on stunts in Indianapolis. Sweat has been really good in his career on stunts. Jervon has been fantastic on stunts. And I don't think the Bears have run any of those. So that is something I am expecting come week one will change dramatically. And then that's where I will start to form my Dio opinion, because if Allen obviously signed that guy thinking that he can scheme pressures from him, and he hasn't done much scheming yet. I don't think his game plan was, we're going to sign Dio and I'm going to play the guy like he's Dwight Freeney, and he's just going to go out there and get 10 sacks by just being a fucking badass. I don't think that was their plan. If it was, I agree it was terrible. The results are scaring me already. But I don't think that's their plan. So we'll see how creatively they use him.
I will say the other three spots against the Chiefs.
On that one, so.
Like, the defense looked like shit. However, Jervon, Grady Jarrett, and Tez generated immense pressure. And yeah, Pat Mahomes got out of it because he's Patrick Mahomes. I don't really care, but man, they were in his face. They were pissing him off. He was rolling outside the pocket, and then it just turned out that nobody was covering anybody downfield. They were giving everybody like 5-yard cushions. I hope that doesn't happen during the
year.
Would
not really bear out with Dennis Allen's history, certainly, for them to have that many cushions.
Agreed.
Yeah. So no, I'm not gonna pull the panic button on the defense yet either, for sure, because that's, if Ben Johnson hasn't shown his cards, Dennis Allen 100% has not shown his cards yet as far as that goes. Anything else that we want to discuss from that game?
Tyson Bagent looked good. I'm glad he's here. I'm glad he signed.
Had he gotten his extension when we had our last? No, he had not, I don't think.
No.
So yeah, Tyson Bagent signed an extension. And again, I know.
Tears, $10 million. The man wept behind the podium, because that is life changing money.
I thought that was really cool. You know, you can sometimes really forget the human element of this, and you can sometimes forget, in real world dollars, how much money like even that contract is.
Yeah.
So that was really cool for him. I thought it was noteworthy that the Bears released a video of the team's reaction to him signing that contract and made sure to highlight how excited Caleb Williams was for him to sign that contract and about pumping everybody up for his guy. And I doubt anybody who listens to the Scottcast is a secret Bagent man. But I know those people won't hear it anyways, but like, I need you guys to understand that if Tyson Bagent actually believed there was an NFL team willing to trade a pick for him, sign him through an RFA tender or whatever in this offseason to give him a chance to start, he's not signing a 2-year, $10 million contract. That is not even mid-tier starter money. That is mid-tier backup money. I think that puts him 37th overall in AAV among NFL quarterbacks right now, and that's including a whole lot of rookies in there. So it's a life-changing money for Tyson. So happy for that dude, but that is solidly backup money. That is not, and he even said he had to think about it for about a week because he really wants to be a starter, and I think he had to be kind of realistic to him with himself about what the odds of that actually are. And if it ever does happen for the guy, you know, no one's going to trade for him based off of four starts 2 years ago where he threw three touchdowns and six interceptions. They're not going to trade for him based off of some preseason stuff because NFL teams know how bullshit preseason football is. His hope is Caleb Williams misses a game or two and Tyson puts up great numbers in a Ben Johnson offense, and then he can maybe Matt Schaub this thing. I think he has to be realistic that that is his best chance at this point. But no, Caleb, but Tyson signed that contract because he's a backup. The Bears view him as a backup. The league views him as a backup. So some of you need to accept that reality, and I know you won't, but it's out there.
Yeah, I think this was just, he took that time to think about it. I think eventually you take a sit down with Ryan Poles and it's like, look, here's the deal. You want to be a starter. That's great. It's not going to happen right now. You have to Matt Flynn this thing, you know, like look at the quarterbacks around the league who are benefiting from the Alex Smith event horizon, right? Or whatever you want to call it, whatever Ryan Poles wants to call it. Sit behind a guy. You've got the best offensive mind in the NFL in Ben Johnson. You get to stand here and learn without pressure. You are solidly our backup, right? And every once in a while, you can come in. And maybe you surprise people. You throw together some big games. And that's where someone takes a chance on you. Somebody throws us a fourth-round pick for you.
Yeah,
and now you've got your shot, kid.
Yeah, well,
I think he's realistic, and he's like, okay, I can do that.
Yeah, well, I mean, because, like, even if a team were to consider trading for him right now, it'd be like, you know, they trade a day three pick for him. And then even if they trade for them with a cost that low, they don't owe him anything, and he's not guaranteed to win. You know, you want to raise your stock enough that a team feels they have to give you a truly legitimate chance because they gave up enough capital for you that they look really bad if they don't at least let you start a few games.
Find a situation where a quarterback gets hurt midseason. You know, you never know what's going to happen. Week three, some big starting quarterback goes down. They didn't have a backup plan. Maybe you have a nice game. Because Caleb stubbed his toe or something, and they're like, fuck it. Third, fourth round pick for Tyson Bagent. We'll try it. We have nothing to lose this season. Anything can happen, but you might as well make your money right now. Because if you test the free agent market after this, there's no guarantee someone else is going to look at Tyson Bagent and say, well, that's a quarterback I want to invest in, even for a backup spot. So great choice by him. You could see how much it meant to him. I mean, we talked about this 3-4 weeks ago with Braxton Jones and why I didn't think there's any chance he's going to let someone supplant him because he's in the same boat. This is a kid who went to Southern Utah and never thought he was going to be here. He could make $20 million a year after the season if he plays well. So it's don't forget, don't abstract away this money, man. That kid is making $5 million a year after being the quarterback at Shepherd University.
Yeah, no, like, it's an awesome story for Tyson. He seems like a legitimately awesome dude. It was a cool moment to see him drive them down and complete the comeback on Friday night. Breachesville doesn't matter, but like that team was fired up by that comeback win. And, you know, some really nice, impressive plays by Jadae Walker, who may have played his way onto the roster.
Sounds like he might have.
I mean, he
did one of those. Tweets.
Yes, they ain't invite me. Which, to be honest, the kid actually, he had like an 8.5 RAS score or like almost a 9 RAS score.
It was like 9.47 or something.
Super fast for a guy that is his, and he's 6'3". He's not small. He was a special teams. I was a little surprised, not that he wasn't like a high draft pick, but I was surprised he wasn't invited to the combine because he went to Texas A&M too. You would think that would merit a combine invite. He was not.
He seems like the guy. I don't mean this to be as rude as it's going to sound, but the guy you wanted Tyler Scott to be a little bit, right? Pure talent, not coming over from running back, right? He's a wide receiver, and I think Ben Johnson can work with that.
Yeah,
he's just going to be a gunner. He's a fast gunner, right? Like,
yeah, I do wonder if that touchdown catch may have ended Tyler Scott's NFL career, certainly.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, I may have missed on that one. I may have, but
it happens.
It happens. We've all
we all miss on these guys.
We've all been wrong.
Speaking of, Is this the way we turn into Colts talk?
You want to segue into Anthony Richardson? So yeah, I mean, it was maybe the biggest NFL news of the week. I don't know. It's been a busy week.
It generated the most conversation, which surprised me.
So yeah, Anthony Richardson did not, in fact, win the Colts starting quarterback competition, which did surprise me because I thought that, like, okay, you brought in Daniel Jones because that is the worst minimum viable quarterback that you can still claim is quote unquote competition. I thought Daniel Jones was a motivational tactic. I thought if the competition was at all close, they'd go with Anthony Richardson. But it really seems like more and more, and from the behind the scenes, it really seems like Anthony Richardson lost Shane Steichen when he asked to come out of that game last year. That was when Shane Steichen seems to have decided, like, this kid doesn't have it. He doesn't have the want to. He needs so much work, and it's only going to work if he's willing to put in the work, and I don't think he's willing to do that. And it seems like Shane Steichen kind of lost his belief in the kid. And maybe that's harsh. Maybe that's too much. Maybe it's unfair that he was that quick to give up on him, but it sure seems like Shane Steichen actually was going to make Anthony Richardson prove beyond the shadow of a doubt that he was a changed man and was capable of doing this stuff before he gave him. Otherwise, it was going to Daniel Jones.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum. We kind of weave in and out of our own takes here about the Colts quarterbacks. It's such a weird conversation we've been having about this. But I told you the second they signed Daniel Jones, I was like, oh, that's it for Tony, because Steichen's offense works better with Daniel Jones. He's going to win. No chance Tony's going to win this competition.
I just didn't think that was, like, yes, we've seen Steichen very effectively run an offense with Gardner Minshew, with Joe Flacco, maybe with Daniel Jones. God help me if he actually does it with Daniel Jones, because then the Alex Smith event horizon is proven scientific fact.
Yeah.
But my thought was, just because he has made those guys work doesn't mean that that's what he wants. That's how he won, because his greatest success came with Jalen Hurts. And what was Jalen Hurts' best statistical season? Certainly Jalen Hurts' most pass-heavy, most vertical-heavy passing season. And then, you go from that Jalen Hurts season directly to drafting Anthony Richardson, and it seems to me like the vision Shane Steichen had of offense was QB run-heavy, a lot of downfield shots, very aggressive. Yep. And I was like, hell yeah, Shane. But then he's been forced to do the Minshew, the Flacco. And so I didn't think that he preferred them, but it sort of maybe seems like maybe he's watched Anthony Richardson flail so badly that he's decided that that is the way. You know what? Maybe Gardner Minshew's of the world ain't so bad. Maybe I didn't know I had with the mustache man.
So when we originally talked about these guys as prospects, we got to bring it all the way back. One of the things I was waffling about, one of the things I said, is there are specific criteria for Anthony Richardson to succeed. And one of them is time. He's going to be bad for a while because he hasn't played much quarterback in his career. When he was coming out, he barely played quarterback in high school. And then he played quarterback at Florida, but it was this pseudo running back, one option throw,
truly
kind
is
of quarterbacking.
I mean, I've ranted a million times about how the Josh Allen comp is the most dangerous thing in sports, and how it is almost never owed. Because, like, for instance, people in that same draft were trying to put a Josh Allen comp on Will Levis. And I was like, that's not what the Josh Allen situation is. The Josh Allen situation is a guy who didn't play a lot in college, is basically a blank slate, has room to grow because of that, isn't a finished product. And then you give him time to suck, you give him unlimited reps, and you let him figure it out. And then you also diagnose A, why he has such accuracy issues, and B, you commit to fixing them. You don't just assume that they'll fix themselves. And so that was what I thought. And so Anthony Richards and Levis did not fit into that, because Levis played for 5 years in college at two Power Five schools, at two Power Five schools that run pro style offenses. He was on Penn State staff. He was in Kentucky staff. Liam Cohen, the current Jaguars head coach, was his fucking offensive coordinator, for crying out loud. That was a guy who'd gotten all the NFL caliber coaching that one can get in college for 5 years, and was still just incredibly underwhelming. And so I said, he's going to be an incredibly underwhelming NFL quarterback. He's going to flash a little bit because that's what a guy like him does, but he's not ever going to consistently do it. Anthony Richardson was the one guy since Josh Allen has happened. Anthony Richardson is the one guy that I said is worth the Josh Allen comp. But that is as exciting as it is, there are such specific criteria, like you said, that have to be met.
You and I at the time both agreed if he misses any significant time, this is
the whole,
over
the whole
because he won't get
because,
the time.
Yeah, but then we referenced Trey Lance too, because that was the Trey Lance that maybe Trey Lance could have had a Josh Allen, but the second he had that injury, it's gone.
The timeline doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
Because we talk about Josh Allen. Josh Allen sucked for only 2.5 years.
We
remember it like it was the longest
time
period.
They have to make a decision after that third year now with the fifth year option. So it's, you got 3 years really. And so you can't lose two of those. And the thing about Josh Allen is, as bad as his rookie year was, and as mediocre, and he was still a solidly below average NFL starting quarterback in year two. And that's where, before Josh Allen's year three, I'd already written him off, because as I've said many times on here, a guy doesn't have to be amazing by year two, but generally speaking, if a guy is going to ever be an NFL above average NFL quarterback on his first contract with his first team, we have the Alex Smith event horizon for these reclamation projects. But if a guy's ever just going to develop in his natural habitat into a good starting quarterback, almost all of those guys.
His natural habitat.
Almost all of those guys.
I like that.
By year two, at least, have put up one average NFL quarterbacking season, average to above average.
Anthony Richardson's natural habitat is
fun,
Indianapolis.
Man. Yeah. and so I wrote off Josh Allen because he improved massively from year one to year two, but he was still a significantly below average NFL quarterback that I was like, yeah, he's still got so far to go. He's not going to do it. But the thing about that is, a guy does have to if a guy has demonstrated that he can massively improve from year one to year two, then he's shown that he is capable of learning at the NFL level. And sometimes those guys do then get better from year two to year three. I bet against Josh Allen, I was wrong. He did get way better from year two to year three, but the trajectory was already clearly going up by year two if you compare it to year one. That's where Anthony Richardson is in trouble, because the trajectory from year one to year two was, if anything, downward. He got worse in most men. Now, granted, he only had four starts as a rookie, so if he'd played more as a rookie, probably would have been worse as a rookie, and maybe year two doesn't look so bad in comparison. But still, and his second set of starts in year two didn't look any better than the first set of starts. Now, granted, we're still talking about an incredibly small sample size, so I don't blame anybody for not writing him off. But for me, the fact that you can't point to anything really and say, okay, it's small, but there's the arrow going up, that is why I'm already off the Anthony Richardson train, because Josh Allen, the arrow was already up by year two. You had to look for it, and I missed it at the time, but it was going up. And Richardson, the other thing too, is that we know specifically Josh Allen took ownership of his accuracy issues. He went to a fucking lab. He had them put the damn dots all over his body, and he repped his throwing motion thousands of times, mapped it, and they were like, okay, so your accuracy issues are because you overstride when you do this. You need to have your feet like this instead of like this. You need to do this instead of this. You need to not move your arm. And he repped it thousands of times until he got it right, because it's so hard to teach yourself a new throwing motion. It's so hard to teach yourself new footwork. We saw coaches fail to do that with Tim Tebow, with Kyle Bowler. Two different coaching staffs try miserably to change how Justin Fields throws the ball with that long ass loopy delivery and changes footwork, and it just couldn't be done. It's so hard to fix. You can sometimes fix footwork.
The Jalen Hurts thing is kind of why we had a little bit of hope with Tony, you know, with Steichen, because Jalen Hurts throwing motion, I've talked about it a bunch, like it's consistent, but it's weird.
It's weird.
Yeah. It's a weird throw.
Yeah, Jalen Hurts was the false hope for Tony. He was the false hope for Justin Fields.
We got to lay off. Jalen is his own guy.
And another thing, Jalen Hurts wasn't super great in year two as an NFL starter, but if you compared him to where he was year one, had made massive improvements. So he'd already demonstrated. And I think some people were a little too quick to write off Jalen before year three, because again, through 2 years, yes, he'd been below average, but the arrow was clearly pointed up. It's safe. It's not safe to assume, but if the arrow has gone up from year one to year two, it can still go up from year two to year three. The real red flag is when the arrow just stays flat in year two, or worse, goes backwards. That was the Zach Wilson problem. You couldn't point to anything he was doing in year two that he was doing better than he did it as a rookie. He was showing no signs of learning whatsoever. And that's why the Jets were so quick to pull the plug. But Anthony Richardson, to this day, he talked about how, I worked on my footwork or whatever, but like, he's never, every quarterback says, I worked on my footwork. If there is an interview and you're a Colts fan, you want to point it out, fine. But like, as far as I know, Anthony Richardson never was like, yeah, I went to so-and-so and they told me that I overstride like this, or my footwork does this, and that's why I'm like, it was just kind of this. And I don't think the Colts really diagnosed it either. I think there was just this organizational idea that the reps will take care of themselves. The reps will take care of it. He'll just rep his way out of it. But like, when you are broken fundamentally, like Richardson is, those reps are dangerous. Those reps are bad reps if you're not actively trying to fix the mechanical issues. And it's clearly mechanical at this point. Like, it's not.
Well, and he didn't get the reps.
Yeah,
I mean,
get the reps.
Like,
so
the dude has started fewer than 17 games in his career at this point, which is why people are so upset. They're like, why are you giving up on him at this point? And also, he turned 23 this year. Like, he's younger than Caleb Williams, which is crazy. He's younger than a lot of the rookies that came out in this class. And that's part of the reason why I had all those caveats for him.
Yeah.
Because where he's at right now, you want to say, this is a guy going into his third year in the NFL, but it's more like a guy going into his senior year of college.
And the number one thing that I have recently learned that I wish I had known at the time, because it would have entirely changed the amount of hope I had for Anthony Richardson to nothing, is that apparently he actually wasn't plan A for the Colts like we thought he was. The Colts apparently at the time bought, and if you remember these rumors, we were talking about them on the DraftCast at the time, they bought the smoke that said that the Texans only wanted Bryce Young, and that if the Panthers truly did take Bryce Young number one, they were going to pass on C.J. Stroud and just wait another year to take a quarterback. And apparently that was what the Colts were banking on.
Now you say that.
They were banking on...
That's easy to put out now as an organization.
Well, no, this was not what the Colts came out. This was where... But he was like, yeah, the Colts... And I don't think saying that now makes the Colts look any better, because if that's Chris Ballard trying to save his job, that's a really stupid way to do it. To be like, yeah, I wanted C.J. Stroud. I thought he was going to fall. I fell for a smokescreen and thus didn't trade up to secure the guy I wanted because I thought he would fall to me. So if I had known, and maybe you don't believe it, if I had known that apparently Anthony Richardson was their plan B once C.J. Stroud was off the board, I would have immediately been out, because if you don't take Anthony Richardson with that guy as your goal in mind the entire time and with a solid plan from day one about how you would fix the things that need fixing, you're fucked. Because this was never just going to be he'll figure it out. Let's see how it goes. No, you need a concrete plan. And I thought they had that. I gave them way too much credit. But they didn't. Travis, what eldritch horror is screaming in your house? Travis is off to deal with beasts. He has so many beasts. So many fucking beasts. How are you folks doing tonight? You good? I guess by the time you listen to it, it's probably not nighttime. Maybe you're listening to it on your commute, probably listening to it in your office.
My cat jumped up, tried to climb the curtain, and it fell down on him, got tangled up in it, and thought it was in for the fight of its life. So that's what that noise was, folks. You're
Travis
welcome.
And his animals. So yeah, I mean, it's and that's why draft analysis is such a hard fight, and it's such a thankless thing to do, because everybody treats draft, and this is actually, I want to transition. This is something I wanted to talk about a little bit because it ties into Jackson Dart, actually, the preseason he's having. People treat draft analysis as a pass-fail test, when actually it's very much I'm giving you a range of outcomes, and I am telling you what my risk tolerance is and whether within that risk tolerance, this guy's worth a gamble. And for you and I both agreed on what the range of outcomes for Anthony Richardson was.
Absolutely, yeah.
And what the probability that he would ever reach his ceiling was, but your risk tolerance was higher than mine. And I just said, ultimately, the accuracy, especially on short passes, and I've never seen anybody, and I still have never seen anybody fix that specific issue. Because people talk about, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, their completion percentage was never as bad as it looked. Because when you go back, they had two of the highest A dots in college of anybody in the spreadsheet. They were bombing it away constantly, but when they were asked to throw it short, throw it middle of the field, they were fine. They weren't like better than average, but they were average at worst. Anthony Richardson, he did bomb it away a lot, but when he was asked to throw it short, as he has in the NFL, he was airmailing the easiest fucking passes into the stands. And I think people just didn't have the historical context to be like, has anybody ever had this problem before? Yes. Has anybody ever fixed this problem before? No. That's my main thing with the spreadsheets. I feel like people don't ground these guys in historical context, because to me, if you're staking your organization on, I can fix this, I want concrete examples of dudes who have fixed it before, and I want to copy whatever they did to fix it. There's not a concrete example of anybody fixing being that bad at short passes, but I think it's so easy for coaches and scouts to be like, it's an 8-yard button hook. How fucking hard can it be to teach a guy to throw an 8-yard button hook? And the answer, just like Ron Washington says in the Moneyball movie, is it's incredibly hard. It's actually incredibly hard to teach a guy like Anthony Richardson or Joe Milton right now, because he had that hilarious quote where Joe Milton misunderstood why people are always talking about how hard he throws the ball. He was like, I don't throw the ball hard. This shit's easy for me. It just flies off my hand. Like, that's not what they're saying, Joe.
Yeah,
Joe, they're saying you throw it too hard for the situation. They're saying that you shouldn't be throwing a slant route as a 105-mile-per-hour fastball. They're not saying that you throw it too hard for guys' delicate fingers. They're saying you are firing, you're firing a bazooka when a sniper rifle is being called for. Like, and that's Anthony Richardson. It's so effortless and so easy for a guy like that with the arm talent he has to just whip that ball 1,000 miles per hour, and he does it every time. And you just don't, and that's why his best passing range in college and in the NFL has been in that intermediate window, in that 10 to 19 yard range, because in my opinion, that is where arm strength matters the most, is on those throws, because those are the throws that are on a line. And those are the throws where his ability to really just zip it in there is great. But it's the short passing throws where he's always just throwing it too damn hard. And I think people are like, hey, how hard can that be to fix? And I think the answer is, yeah, it's very hard. It's way harder than you think.
Yeah, this is why it's interesting that we've come to like different conclusions when it comes to the Colts, because like, to me, I do think potentially that's fixable if you give him enough time, but it's that time that
the Colts,
not going to have.
The problem is that the Colts staff does not have that time anymore. Even
right,
if they wanted
so
to
me, the second that he missed significant time that first season, we needed a pivot. I think they should have done a Trent Richardson, and they should have said,
traded him after
cut bait now.
Yeah, trade
cut bait now, get maximum value, and we will pick up, you know, what the Colts were doing before. We got Matt Ryan in here. Yeah. We got Phillip Rivers in here. We're going to pick up an old guy. Hey, they could have, you know, done to Carson Wentz. You could do whatever you want. Grab one of these guys, right, and make that work. Because at that point, you know it's not going to be for you. Yeah. This guy is still young, but we see with Trey Lance, with Jim Harbaugh and Greg Roman, fantastic situation sitting behind Justin Herbert for as long as he can. We see it with Malik Willis, another highly talented guy who maybe was never going to get a fair shake at his first stop. He needed more time than he was going to get for where he was drafted. Now he gets to sit with one of the best quarterback coaches in the NFL as a head coach. He can hang out behind Jordan Love and progress. And Tony needs to find that guy. He needs to go out. He needs to be a Viking. He needs to sit with Kevin O'Connell for 2, 3, 4 years and become a quarterback if that's what he wants to do. He may not want to do that. He doesn't seem like a guy who necessarily needs football, right?
Yeah, I mean, and he got, $20 million guaranteed already? That's generational wealth if you've used it. You know, Tony, if you want to go do something else.
You are fine. I have heard your rap, Tony, and I think it's totally passable. You can pursue that career.
Might be the
I
only thing about you that's that. Totally passable right now. Am I right,
that's
Tony?
Right.
Ah,
that's right.
Because you can't throw
that's
the football.
Right. And this is why, so we got to close it off with this. I have seen Colts fans say tank. We are tanking, and that's why we picked Daniel Jones. Guys,
oh, they're absolutely
right now.
They are trying.
Today, there is no question Daniel Jones is a better quarterback than Anthony Richardson. Tony doesn't just need one more full season. He needs two.
Yeah. I have seen some people, and this is where I, you know, because I always walk the line between analytics nerd and not analytics nerd. I feel like for football, I'm the most analytically minded of the meatballs, but the most meatball of the analytics nerds, I feel like. And I've seen some people like Daniel Jones doesn't actually give them a better chance to win, because if you look at Anthony Richardson's yard per attempt, and if you look at his EPA per dropback ball, and you add the value of the rushing, but the thing is that the guys, I know I get what you're saying, and that the results in the aggregate aren't actually that different. But the thing is, an NFL team actually rather would have 4 10-yard completions in a row than 1 40-yard completion followed by 3 incomplete passes. No matter whether the EPA math adds up or not, it's very hard. It's actually impossible to, we saw this with Justin Fields. It's impossible to build an NFL offense that is consistent in any way around, yeah, he's going to launch a bomb here. Yeah, he's going to scramble for 15 yards here. You can't consistently plan that. So they will take the scheduled mediocrity of Daniel Jones over the chaos of Anthony Richardson.
Yeah, Steichen is looking at two playbooks, and he's like, do I cut out half of my shit, and I just play the short game, and I do what Daniel Jones can do well, and I know he's going to do it when I tell him to do it, or do I use my whole playbook with Anthony Richardson, and do I not know what the outcome of the play is going to be, because it's a coin flip every play, and I almost every coach in the NFL is going to take that Daniel Jones option because they believe they're going to have more success with it because it's just,
well,
it's
and also the NFL is a business, and like the Colts have guy, you know, Josh Downs is entering a contract career. That's a contract. That's a guy who wants to know he can count on getting 100 targets. You have all of these guys who like they're competing for jobs and livelihood. They want consistency in knowing what they're going to get. And like that matters too. And losing the locker room is a very real thing. And if you don't believe it, look at what happened to the Bears last year after the failed marriage.
Look at the Colts. Like, at the end of last year, they were a disaster.
Look at how quickly and how badly things can sink with a team that on the surface isn't that bad if they've stopped believing in their coach and they've stopped trying for him. It can get ugly. So Steichen's in none envy, and he's going to get fired. They're all dead anyways. They are, but he's got to do what he's got to do.
If Steichen fails at this, it's his last year. If he gives Anthony Richardson another year, it's like charity for Tony, but it doesn't help Shane at all.
No,
he has his job on the line too, man. Like everybody here, it deserves a chance, and Anthony Richardson does not give them the best chance this year. That was always the problem with Tony. He needs to catch on somewhere else. He needs experience. He needs to sit behind somebody. And I hope he does because, God, I love the talent the guy has. But even as Anthony Richardson's like number one fan, I'm like, you can't, if you want to win this year, you don't start Anthony Richardson.
Yeah. And then, I mentioned Jackson Dart a little bit ago and QB analysis, draft analysis being a spectrum. And that's, Jackson Dart, this is doesn't really have that much to do with Jackson Dart, but it's just the way people are talking about him. And I feel like this happens every year in the NFL.
88 PFF grade this preseason.
I feel like this happens every year in the NFL with people like pundits that don't watch college football, and then they don't really have any respect for the draft industry as a whole. They don't really have any respect for people who do watch college football or tell them stuff because they just take this mentality of college football doesn't fucking matter. The NFL is the only thing that matters. And preseason is the first time they've seen these guys. And so these guys are watching Jackson Dart go out there and run a handful of concepts against preseason and deliver an accurate football and show off his athleticism and show off his nice touch on the deep ball. And they're like, why'd everybody slam the Giants for this pick? This kid looks great. And it drives me nuts because, and I saw this a couple years ago, Will Levis had that amazing first start with the Titans. Remember, he threw 4 touchdown passes against the Falcons. And I distinctly remember it was Lewis Riddick who had been boosting Levis at the draft. Lewis Riddick was like, oh, I bet the Falcons wish they'd taken Will Levis today. And I was like, it seems like these guys that don't really watch college football, all they hear is the Charlie Brown teacher noise at draft time talking about these prospects. They just hear, rah, 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 QB good, or rah, 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 QB bad. And so when they hear QB bad and they watch this guy play and he doesn't look immediately bad to them, they're like, these fuckers don't know what they're talking about. They tried to sell me a bill of goods. And it drives me nuts because if the evaluation of Jackson Dart was very nuanced from almost anybody that was respectable, nobody questions the arm strength. Nobody questions the athleticism. Nobody even questions the accuracy. He's got all of those. Everything about Jackson Dart comes out of the fact that Lane Kiffin does not run a real NFL offense. It's barely a high school offense. He runs 4 plays that he switches up to make look like more than 4 plays, but he runs 4 plays. Jackson and each of those plays pretty much only has one read on them. Jackson Dart is not taught to be an NFL quarterback. And I'm not saying that to say that he's going to suck or that he can't learn, but like there's a very specific reason why people are like, it is risky as hell to take this kid in the first round where the expectation more often than not, no matter what teams say, is that you're going to play as a rookie because he's not ready. And if you rush him, he may never be ready. But if you give him time, he might become ready. He just like Travis's favorite philosopher. He's like Schrodinger's quarterback right now. Like it whether or not he can become a good NFL quarterback might very much depend
on
how quickly you ask him to try to be an NFL quarterback. Because all the stuff that he needs to learn is between the ears right now. It's got nothing to do with how well he can throw the football when he's out there. Because he's a guy.
It's so funny. Because, like, you know, I watch all the rookie tape from the preseason, and I look over it, and, man, I texted you excitedly, like, oh, man, Jackson Dart, like, man, he looks really good. Like, it looks like the Giants got a winner, you know, in a couple years. Like, he's got some time. He can sit behind Russell Wilson. If Dabble doesn't get fired, this could be good. And the discourse online is just like, why aren't you starting Jackson Dart? Jackson Dart should be playing right now. Yeah. Push him out there. And I'm like, oh, no.
Right. My biggest fear
not what you do.
My biggest fear for Jackson Dart is that, A, he gets forced into action as a rookie. And then I think people will get a rough wake-up call because the NFL requires you to run more than four concepts, but also that he'll play bad. The Giants will lose games. Dable will get fired. And then you're in Bears territory, buddy. You're getting Mitch Trubisky. There's going to be a new coach and a new GM coming in who didn't pick you and probably want nothing to do with you. In fact, will quickly determine that the easiest thing for their job security is to scapegoat you and buy themselves a couple more years by taking a different guy after your second year. We've seen that story happen before. So I hope for Jackson Dart's sake, and I never really, like I said, I didn't have super strong feelings about Jackson Dart either way because he's impossible to evaluate. That given offense. But
we say it every year about an Ole Miss quarterback. You know, it's the ultimate lottery ticket. Yeah, you don't know.
And the one thing I will say is that in the spreadsheet, especially if you statistically very, very similar to Matt Corral, the last guy who came out of that,
shocking,
and was a total disaster in the NFL, didn't even stick around as a backup. But yeah, so it's really not even a point about Jackson Dart. I wish the kid luck, and I think, like I said, I think Dable is a good coach, really, who, if he gets the opportunity to and the patience to develop the kid, really could develop him. But it's just more that, like. And we saw this with Bo Nix last year, too. Some people were like, you told me Bo Nix fucking sucked. All I heard was Bo Nix sucked. And this kid, he looks pretty smart. He looks pretty accurate. And I'm like,
he fucking sucks.
You didn't read. And the biggest example of this was the Mac Jones rookie year. Because, oh, my God, there were so many people, pundits, like, oh, you guys were all about Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields. You talked about their big arms. Well, the kid that outplayed him was the smart, accurate, veteran quarterback Mac Jones. And I'm like, yeah, because that's all that he's got to offer. And he's shown you all of it as a rookie. And now it's about where he goes from here. And that's the same thing with Bo Nix. Because if you had asked me last year, gun to my head, all statistics in, especially EPA per play, which we know dings you so badly for sacks. If you put a gun to my head and said, is there any possibility that Bo Nix ranks higher in EPA than Caleb Williams as a rookie? I would have said probably not, but yeah, there's a possibility because Bo Nix does not take sacks and Bo Nix does not turn the ball over too often. Bo Nix is really good at avoiding negative plays. He's just not very good at generating positive ones. And that was Mac Jones as a rookie. And so we'll see this year with Bo Nix as they ask him to do more in year two. But like, this QB analysis stuff, it's not pass-fail, and it's definitely not, we know the answer after year one. We generally know the answer by year three if we're lucky. So give it some fucking time, assholes.
Yeah, I mean, if you had asked me last year with how much I hate Bo Nix, and I still hate Bo Nix as a prospect and as an NFL quarterback, if you had been like, what if I told you Bo Nix threw 29 touchdowns? I would be like, yeah, did Sean Payton have him throw the ball 565 times? And they would be like, yeah. And I would be like, is it like 6.7 yards per attempt? And they would have been like, yeah, how did you know that? I'd be like, that's great, because he's going to do that again every fucking year.
Yeah,
of his
that's going to be, yeah.
Like, that's who he
is. I hope you like it, because that's probably what he's going to do in year two and year three and year four. If he gets year four, a lot of times that guy doesn't. So it's, yeah, it's funny that we do. And that's same with like Jaden Daniels. Like, if you told me, like, yeah, Cliff Kingsbury is going to run literally his college offense with him as a rookie, and I'd be like, oh, he might look kind of good in that then. I don't know how sustainable that is, but he might kind of look good in that for a while, because yeah, he'll drop back and he'll hit his first read if it's there, and he'll run for 9 yards per scramble, and they'll have a good run game. but I don't know how long you can keep that up. But again,
do we close this up by talking about the play that Jaden ran?
So. Yeah, that was literally
It sent me over the edge so bad, folks, that I actually was like, "Don't
go back and go back and watch Jaden Daniels' touchdown run against the Bengals this preseason." Ask yourself why number 27 on the Bengals just pulls up and does not drill the kid in the chest when he absolutely could have. And then ask yourself what would have happened if it was Caleb Williams or Justin Fields on that scramble, because you know those guys would have been launched into orbit. But I literally did the Jesse from Breaking Bad. He can't keep getting away with it because
Jaden
Two different Bengals
NFL.
Have a kill shot at the guy and just don't take it for no reason.
This shouldn't work. That's going to be the name of Jaden Daniels' autobiography. This shouldn't work.
This shouldn't work.
Why did he score a touchdown on that play? From any angle, that is, it's so bad. Everything
and
he did, his progression is trash.
He flees a clean pocket. He scrambles for a touchdown. He should have been absolutely laid out, and he scores the touchdown anyways. And I'm just like, God damn it. It's just going to keep happening.
Drove me insane. And then you waited. And the next day you sent me that video and I was like, I'm going to die. I'm going to explode. I can't watch this shit again. So next week we're going to have Nick on. We're going to talk about the NFC North. We're going to preseason pretty
much
that?
Just that. Have we asked Nick if he wants to be on?
He's coming. Don't worry. I haven't said anything. I'll email him right now.
We should email him and make sure of that. So
I thought, okay, yeah, well, he's coming. All right. He'll come. He'll bring the baby. We'll talk about the NFC North. I mean, we aren't previewing the rest of the NFL because honestly, the AFC is just can any of the four teams with a shot at it finally beat the Chiefs? I mean, I'm looking forward to the season, Kyle. We got some football this last weekend. We got an abortive game in Ireland between Iowa State and Kansas State. Oh, it was a mess. It was glorious. I'm ready for more college football this weekend, and then 2 weeks from now. We have a Bears game tonight, 2 weeks from Monday night. We've got a Bears game. Folks, we have a Friday game at the Eagles on Black Friday. That's all I have to say. I'm fucking tired of the NFL scheduling these games. That is reprehensible.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get into that next week. But, like, yeah, the Bears schedule is the hardest thing for me to commit to any particular record prediction for this team because it's just – it is a – brutal schedule even in the best of circumstances. So
it's nasty. We'll talk about it all next week, so we'll see you then.
All right, good night, folks.
Way out on that bumper's road, now you know I'm leaving Chicago, and people that show do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving.